Three ridiculous men, one beautiful game. Some Canadian guys talking about soccer.
All right, hello everyone, and thanks for listening to the Some Canadian Guys Talking About Soccer podcast, available on sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. This is Daniel Squizzato, a.k.a. Squiz, and I'm joined, as usual, by my two fellow writers, fellow podcasters, and fellow Canadian guys. First, he was snubbed by the Oscars, but he's a shoe-in for the Golden Raspberries. He's my fellow writer at CanadianSoccerNews.com, Grant Surridge. Grant?
Feel the same way every year at this time.
I guess that answers how you're doing.
Yep.
Also with us, a man who, contrary to what you may have heard, is actually not the new CEO of Research in Motion, but he is still a soccer writer for Sportsnet.ca and senior editor at Sportsnet magazine, Jamie Doyle. Jamie, how are you?
Disappointed.
Yeah, I know.
Still just an editor and soccer writer and not CEO of a large failing company.
I think you're much more dynamic than the new CEO of Research in Motion.
His name is Thor. Yeah. I think that's fairly
dynamic.
But
have you seen him talk?
He hasn't brought out the hammer.
This is 2 weeks in a row that you've been denied opportunities to be something along the lines of Thor.
That's exactly right.
Well, maybe third time will be the charm next week. On this week's show, we're going to be talking about some of the storylines that have emerged from the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament in Vancouver and look ahead to Canada's do-or-die showdown with Mexico on Friday night. Joining us to add some of her thoughts will be Canadian Women's National Team veteran Claire Rustad. Later on in the show, in promotion relegation, we will hit on such topics as unusual injuries, Luis Suarez impressions, and a long-awaited glass of wine. And stay tuned for Taste the Trivia, where you'll find out how you can be a part of next week's podcast. But before any of that, gentlemen, a little bit of housekeeping we need to get to here. There's going to be a little bit of a tumultuous time here in the Some Canadian Guys world over the next little while. Mm-hmm. Grant, maybe I'll let you tell the folks what's going on by telling us what you got up to earlier Wednesday morning.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like we're sort of going through our own sort of period of puberty, I guess you could say.
I wouldn't say that.
No, it doesn't make any sense at all. What's happened to me recently is that through various circumstances, I'm going to be going to India for about 3 weeks to a month.
Were you drafted in the Indian Premier League auction that you mentioned last
week? No, not yet.
That's
not
unfortunate.
Yet. Yeah.
Well, fingers crossed.
Exactly. I mean, I have to go there and sort of show myself off before they'll consider that.
Well, watch out, India.
What are you, just going to be paraded in the public square with people grabbing at your thigh muscles to make sure that you're of an adequate stock?
Lifting my tail and checking out the
topless and the oiled
business.
Up.
Yeah. The business.
Checking out the business, yes. Anyway, as Grant alluded to there, we're going to be trying to figure out our own business here.
That is the very least of what Grant alluded to.
Hold on, but Ken, so I was doing some, I'm going to be going to Bangalore, so I did some research about that. And I've come across sort of the local I-League team.
Uh-huh.
That's the Indian League.
For anyone who can't spell.
Why'd you look at me like that? I know that. You already told me about this.
All right, okay. So my new home club, I'm happy to say, is the Hindustan Aeronautics Limited Sporting Club.
Up the HAL SC.
Yeah.
And can anyone guess where they currently sit in the I-League First Division, or in the I-League?
Because it's you, it's got to be round about the bottom.
Well, I was going to say, if it's Grant, it's probably going to be frustratingly on the cusp of usefulness, but not actually making it there.
No, dead last.
Yeah.
Bottom of the table.
So do you think that your presence is going to help?
HAL SC.
Is that why you're going over there, Grant? Are you a new holding midfielder for Hindustan Aeronautics?
No, not at all.
I've got a suggestion just straight off the top. Why don't they just take the word limited out of there?
Unlimited.
Unlimited. They've limited their potential pretty severely, sounds like it, by being crappy. Take out limited. Take off the limits.
That's a hell of an idea. Grant, mm-hmm. Why don't you go over there, recommend that to them, and when you come back, when you come back, be sure to give us a report on their status in the I-League. Anyway, as a result of that, we're going to be making some adjustments over the next few weeks here. We don't actually know what they're going to be. We're going to head to the pub after we record this and figure it out.
But, we're going to try and finish the robo-grant in time.
Yeah, a lot of people who've listened to the old version of the show kind of figured that the two of you were actually robots. And I think with this new shiny display board in front of us here, we can see whether or not there is a way to robotically replace Grant.
What if we just record? Like, we've recorded a lot of his voice. We can just piece together.
Parse it together,
individual words. We can make it say whatever we want.
I don't often make any salient points anyway. It's just kind of sound.
Yeah. And then I grabbed her sweet can.
sweet.
Mr. Simpson, that's appalling. Anyway, that's a little housekeeping bit there. We'll keep you guys posted in the weeks ahead, but we're going to focus now on something that's actually of relevance to the greater world of soccer. That's the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament going on in Vancouver. Not many surprises there in terms of Canada's performance. Three round-robin games, three victories. Probably the biggest surprise is that they actually conceded a goal, a late one to Costa Rica. But as we suspected, big semifinal showdown on Friday against Mexico. Winner goes to the Olympics. Loser goes, well, I guess, wherever they want. Jamie, I'll turn this to you first. There's been a number of storylines come out of this tournament in addition to the way the Canadian women's team has played. So what have your impressions been thus far?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much as we expected. I mean, I'm not entirely sure what a cakewalk is now that I think about it, but it has been one for Canada, whatever that means. The only real point of interest, I mean, because despite the wins, it's as expected. The second game, playing without Christine Sinclair and playing with, in as much as they can, with the squad they've taken, kind of a B squad, the kind of alternative team made up of the players they've got, they didn't play. It wasn't their best moment. They didn't do that well in the second half. They kind of missed scoring chances and such. So it's a bit of a window, an insight, if you will, into life without Christine Sinclair. And it wasn't as encouraging as I'd hoped. Still, they won easily.
Yeah, that has been a big storyline, of course, from the Canadians' perspective. Christine Sinclair, of course, not really surprising anyone in showing off her goal-scoring aptitude thus far. She's been one of the stars of the tournament, as would have been expected. But as you say, Jamie, Canadian fans are getting to the point where we have to think about what life will be like when she's no longer an integral part of the team. Grant, I'll throw this next question to you. A Canadian-born player who we thought people thought at one point might represent the goal-scoring future of the Canadian women's national team. This was many, many years ago, of course. Right. Sydney LaRue, who's been a storyline there, born in Surrey, BC, decided when she was 15 to go south and play for the U.S., came on in the U.S.'s second game, a romp over Guatemala, and scored five goals in the matter of about half an hour.
That doesn't often happen.
No, not really. So, Grant, you got any thoughts to share about young Ms. LaRue and her bursting on the scene?
I didn't actually realize until just a little while ago that her father is American, which kind of makes me less wound up about the whole situation.
So on a scale of 1 to 10 in terms of wound-upedness?
I'm like a 6.2.
That's pretty precise.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what does that mean? If you're wound up to an extent of 6.2, I mean, seeing her succeed for the U.S., does it make you angry or you feel good for her? Does it actually
matter to you? I definitely don't feel good for her. I don't even know her. A tinge of regret, I suppose, because she could have been doing that for Canada. But, I mean, let's face it, she scored five goals against Guatemala, so...
It's only five more than you've scored.
Exactly.
Well, we don't know that. Grant could have scored five in his sleep against Guatemala.
Against that team? I would say probably so. But bringing up this point, Grant, sure. You know, you seem to be a little bit magnanimous about Sydney LaRue, but... Definitely with a little less magnanimity have been some of the members of the Voyageurs and the Canadian supporters in attendance at BC Place who have, you know, tried to do some heckling, tried to do some booing. And from what we've gleaned from different places, apparently the BC Place security has cracked down on that to some extent. This was something that did get you wound up, is
right.
It not?
Yeah, no, that would be close to a 10 on the wind-up scale.
Ooh, a 9.3, shall we say?
9.4, 5, maybe.
Whoa.
So does this make any kind of sense, then, for security to step in and tell, you know, if this is what's happening, telling a crowd that they can't boo, that they can't say so-and-so sucks?
On Twitter they were throwing out these allegations that they weren't allowed to use the word suck, which is not really a word I'd want to share around the dinner table, depending who I was dining with. But I mean, it's a soccer game. I mean, good God.
Yeah.
I just think you can kill the atmosphere up to a certain point, and then it just what is the point?
True enough, Jamie.
I think a lot of this might just be the product of the fact that these games aren't sold out by any means. So every individual who's making a lot of noise stands out so much more. And then it just seems like, well, everyone else is quiet and behaving themselves. Why is this one person using words like sucks? I mean, obviously, it's ridiculous. But in a context of a huge crowd just kind of yelling, the whole thing seems to kind of blend in a bit more.
But I'm just for no good reason
standing up for security.
I mean, the thing that makes me wonder is is it just the guy who's head of security at BC Place? Does he just make an arbitrary decision? Is it the tournament organizers? Is it the CSA? How, like, who decides you can't say the word suck?
Well, I'm fairly confident the CSA have a problem with it. But
I've been to plenty of sporting events where you get drunk and yell all sorts of things. I don't understand why at this one you can't. Yeah, I mean, boo people.
I've personally yelled things that would make suck seem like polite dinner conversation. But, yeah, I don't really know. And I think maybe part of it is that it's a women's tournament and there's just some kind of – you can't yell that at a woman. And I do feel
but still,
bad.
Whose decision is that?
I imagine that it's the individual stewards who just kind of – getting puffed up on their own power. I mean, that happens from time to time, and they're just kind of, well, I'm in charge here. I'm running the show. I've got the, you know, windbreaker on.
But Jamie, you mentioned, you know, you raised the elephant in the room.
Isn't
there.
The roof? Wait a minute, why do they need a windbreaker?
Wait a minute. I successfully raised an elephant. That's
well,
all
you have,
on my own.
You were carrying a windbreaker that caught an updraft, and the elephant went on up with it. But you raised the specter there that if this is what's happening, and, you know, we've seen a number of people say this, if there is some kind of crackdown on crowd interaction, you know, the fans that have been there in the Canadian games have been, you know, very loud, very supportive of the Canadian team. But if there is sort of a gender-based rule that's at play here in terms of cracking down on what the audience can and can't chant, does that make any sense to you? I mean, doesn't that seem a bit ridiculous and
didn't
insulting?
You guys went to the last World Cup. It was the Gold Cup, the game in Columbus you went to.
That was two Gold Cups ago.
Yeah, well, the men's team in 2009.
Right. And weren't you, like, denied the opportunity to make signs with the F word or something? Some heavy-handed security there as well?
Well, that was a bit of a strange situation, and it kind of gets to what was being said a minute ago, in that there was a group of about, you know, 30 to 40 of us who were just kind of stationed in our own little area. And as was, sorry, I already forgot, I think it was Jamie said, you know, the fewer of you that are there, the more power security has to kind of enforce things, because they can individually point at someone and say, I don't like what you're saying. Now, you know, you talk about a sign saying the F word. I mean, if somebody's, you know, bringing in a sign that's that has completely profane or vulgar language, I mean, that I can kind of understand. But the word, you know, cracking down on something like the word sucks, I mean, it sounds like Helen Lovejoy, to make another Simpsons reference. You know, won't somebody please think of the children?
Well, that's exactly the point that I was going to raise, is that
Helen Lovejoy?
Sex cauldron.
The sex cauldron. I thought they closed that place down. No, that at these games, not only is there a relatively empty, kind of echoey stadium, but it's also, as we've seen from going to women's matches, they get a huge number of young girls that show up from their club teams, and we're talking like 9, 10-year-old girls who show up and watch. And then, I mean, I can see if, say, you're put on your security person hat.
My windbreaker.
Yeah, you're just standing there watching somebody yell something that's even mildly offensive, and you look over to your right, and there's about 40, you know, 9-year-old girls. You might be inclined to go and kind of clamp down for their sake.
Yeah, but you can
sake.
Swear to Britney Spears concert, I think.
How many Britney Spears concerts have you been to, Grant?
That is just the weird.
Grant is the one guy wandering in just saying, he goes, play toxic, you biatch!
He specifically goes in to swear.
Stand at the back and swear.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of ridiculous to me on a number of levels in
me going to a
well,
Britney
yeah, Grant
Spears.
Going to a Britney Spears concert.
That's the fourth time somebody said that to me today about
but
a
the
comment.
Idea that a, you know, a 9 or 10-year-old kid is going to have their psyche destroyed by hearing the word sucks, and you know, especially if it's, well, they're young girls, they can't hear the word sucks. I mean, you know, they can wander around a grocery store and look at a magazine cover that encourages them to, you know, be bulimic to the point of starving themselves. They can watch
there might even be a picture of a Britney Spears concert where God knows how many people are swearing.
I mean, I learned some of the most colorful language I know to this day from going to Winnipeg Jets games as a kid and like listening to all the drunk guys.
Well, you were
yelling.
Never a 9-year-old girl.
That's true.
I know, and to be fair,
Grant, how else will you learn that Sergey Bouton sucks?
I'm not actually taking this position myself. I'm playing the role of devil's advocate or devil's security guard.
Well, suffice to say, there is still some work to be done on this continent when it comes to ensuring that security can reach the right balance between crowd control and allowing the amount of passion that makes this sport great. And it's an argument that's been had many times over in different venues. But when it comes to that kind of passion, we'll get on this quickly. It's a bit old by now, but I wanted to get you guys' thoughts on this. Pia Sundhage, the coach of the U.S. Women's National Team, got a little bit of flack after the U.S.'s first game, the 14-0 rout of the Dominican Republic, where she was still very actively celebrating even the later goals and gesticulating about them. Grant, I'll ask you, is that excessive? Does it really matter to you? I mean, was it in poor taste?
Well, see, I actually heard at one point she was hip thrusting. And I tried to find this on YouTube and couldn't. So I don't know if the, but if she really was hip thrusting, to me that is just by itself a disastrous thing. Like, Grant, she shouldn't be hip thrusting even if she just won the World Cup.
Grant, how long did you spend Googling hip thrusting?
I did about 15 minutes worth.
Where did it lead you from there?
Let's just...
All right, well, moving right along.
Speaking of things we can't talk about in good company.
Jamie?
I agree that, I mean, I guess the two sides are that, you know, her team, this is a competition, and then it's very important to them, and they take it very seriously. And then winning, no matter how badly you, or how big the win is, or who you're playing, it still feels really good, and you have the right to celebrate. And also, the other side being, you know you're going to win this game. It's already 14-0. You don't need to celebrate. I'd fall somewhere in the middle where, celebration's fine. Getting excited, that's good. Enthusiasm's wonderful. Any kind of unnecessary hip thrusting is just over the top. And you do have to have some respect for your opponents.
I would say that there are very few instances in which hip thrusting is necessary.
And I think all coaches should be this, like, the stone cold,
exactly,
evil dad type who
you
just
imagine.
Like, you could score the best goal ever to win a tournament, and you're not going to get anything. The face is just rock solid. He's like the parent.
You could have scored sooner.
Yeah, he or she would be like the parent from whom you can never really get approval.
I don't think I've ever seen Bob Bradley move. He would just sit.
Speaking
just
of windbreakers,
like a statue.
Yeah. They just wheel him into the stadium and plop him down next to the bench.
Maybe that's what it was. I mean, it's just something about wearing a windbreaker that inherently makes someone very stoic and prone to being serious.
I thought you were going to say, I didn't actually see Pia Sundhage, and so I thought she was wearing a windbreaker, in which case maybe the wind just kind of caught her, and it wasn't hip thrusting, it was just trying to stand in one place.
No, the elephant in the room knocked her windbreaker right off, and hence she, just was overcome with joy.
I've got a thought. Grant, while you're in India, about adding more elephants to soccer.
Yeah,
just make
a
note. Make a note to yourself.
They play elephant soccer in some, I think it's in Thailand, isn't it?
Yeah. I have no idea. I've never heard of that before. But
yeah, no, I've seen it.
I'm rapidly becoming interested.
It's a real thing, and I assume that India is just overrun with elephants, just looking for jobs, begging on the streets. Let's get them into some kind of a
league. In front of you in line in Starbucks.
I saw the look on Grant's face when I mentioned the elephant soccer in Thailand. Instantly, the gears in his head were rotating, saying, how can I somehow arrange a trip to Thailand?
Is going places.
Grant needs only the flimsiest of excuses to scuttle off to Southeast Asia, and I think I may have just sunk
elephant
this for
football
him.
Is it.
Yeah, so you're now going to be gone for 2 months, 1 month in India, and the next month off in Bangkok somewhere.
It's research. It's a research trip. He'll expense it to someone.
One last point here on
MasterCard.
On the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament, I mentioned the 14-0 rout of the Dominican Republic by the U.S., and that goal that Canada conceded to Costa Rica resulted in the only game that wasn't a shutout. So obviously, there is quite a bit of competitive disparity in this tournament. Jamie, I'll turn it to you. Some people have said shrink the tournament, do away with it altogether. Not do away with it altogether, but alter it in some way. Looking at this, this has always been the problem in a region such as this, where you have Canada and the U.S. that are so head and shoulders above everyone else. But is there anything in the short term that can be done to alleviate this, or is just kind of the way that it's going to be in a region such as CONCACAF?
I think it's just the way it's going to be, and I get the idea of shrinking the tournament, but I don't think it's really the solution. I mean, just taking the bad teams out of a tournament isn't going to make them any better. In fact, it may just make them worse. They have no reason to get better if they're not going to be in the tournament to begin with. So I'd say you just kind of have to suffer through it for a little while. I mean, we've seen that leaps and bounds have already been made in the big tournaments themselves. You can only ask for so much for a qualifying tournament to be this exciting and this competitive. So you just kind of have to let it evolve naturally, I'd think.
I imagine it won't be too long before Mexico's in there.
Yeah, I mean, and there are natural soccer countries that will, pick up, and they'll see that, the women's game is a legitimate thing, and they'll maybe put a little bit of money into it or whatever they need to do, and then bada boom, bada bing, away you go.
Yeah, Mexico, as you say, Grant, is kind of slowly creeping up on the U.S. and Canada, and seems like there'll be a little bit of a test for Canada on Friday night. I mean, they're head and shoulders above the rest of the field, except for Canada and the U.S. So some quick predictions here before we speak to Claire about the tournament. Grant, Canada, U.S. semifinal here, Olympic berth on the line. What are you expecting?
Canada, Mexico.
Thank you. Can you pick a score?
The score line.
Yeah. Grant accurately predicted.
You might have just been asking me about the final. You just jumped right over it. I'm going to say 2-0 Canada over Mexico.
All right, Jamie.
I want to say 3-0 over Mexico as well. And I do want to say one last thing about the competitive thing. Just
yes.
A team like Haiti that you get in, they would obviously be one of the teams that would be denied access to the tournament if you kind of cut it down to a more competitive size. But this is kind of the beauty of sport. Haiti and Haitian women have obviously had a pretty rough go of it of late, and you can't imagine a good reason to have taken this experience away from them, even though in a sporting level they didn't do very well. But I meant the experience they got, and they won, didn't they?
Yeah.
So I mean, taking that experience away from them just kind of takes away from the purity of sport, I think, in a very real way. And you know, and you never know what happens. They won. There you go.
Because when you think CONCACAF, you think the purity of sport.
I think purity of sport happens despite CONCACAF,
despite its best efforts.
Yeah.
We're now going to be joined by someone who has a little bit more hands-on experience when it comes to the women's national team and playing on large stages such as this. We're going to be joined by Canadian women's national team veteran Claire Rustad right after this. Joining us now on the line from Toronto, Ontario, she is a Canadian women's national team veteran, and you may recognize her from her work for CBC during last year's Women's World Cup, Claire Rustad. Claire, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, good. Thank you for taking the time to join us. You're stationed in Toronto now, but you did just get back into town from Vancouver. While you were out there, you did catch some of the Women's Olympic qualifying tournament, and you've been keeping an eye on it as well. So, in a general sense, what have your impressions been of the tournament thus far?
I guess I'm seeing what everybody else is seeing, and that's a pretty big gap between the top three teams, U.S., Canada, and Mexico, and then the rest of the tournament. And it's unfortunate. I mean, CONCACAF has traditionally been like that, and it's been great to see teams like Mexico and even Costa Rica make some progress over the last few years, but there still is a glaring gap between the top teams and the bottom teams, just too bad. And it's unfortunate to be seeing blowout games, but that's pretty much the status of the CONCACAF right now.
And that's something that we were actually talking about before we brought you in, that competitive disparity. Is there anything that can be done in the short term to try to address that in this region, or is it just a matter of having those weak teams being exposed to a higher level of competition and then hopefully gaining experience and talent as time goes along?
I'm not really sure if there is a short-term solution. It's about developing the women's game worldwide, and it's not something that can be done in the short term. And we see that on our own home soil. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to change systems and to change the infrastructure that's in place. And a lot of these countries don't even have that yet. So it's going to take some time. And yes, exposing them to higher levels of competition is fantastic, and it really allows teams to grow. But I'm not necessarily sure there's much to be learned from 14-0 losses and real blowout scores like we saw between the U.S. and the Dominican Republic.
So, I mean, on that sort of line, you say there's not much to learn. So is there anything we can take away from Canada's, in terms of tactics or anything, from Canada's play so far?
From Canada's play so far? I mean the Canadians have shown that they are not the team that they were in the World Cup, which is great. It's fantastic to see them playing a very a possession-oriented game, but that at the same time likes to move forward quickly, and they've been attacking a lot quicker than I've seen them do in the past, which is great. But at the same time, they also haven't been tested yet. I think they've played against some much weaker competition, and I really would like to see how they fare against top 10 teams and even against the U.S., who I think looks extremely strong right now, perhaps even stronger than they did in the World Cup.
We did get to see one game where Christine Sinclair wasn't used. I mean, she's a huge part of the team, obviously, but Canadian fans always have kind of a negative outlook, and so we always have in the back of our minds what happens when she's not there anymore, and we did get to see that. What did you make of Canada's play without her?
You mean like what happens if she breaks her nose or something?
Well, we know what happens if she breaks her nose. She plays even better.
That was a joke. Well, I mean, a I think what I've been encouraged by a lot in the last few years with respect to the Canadian team is the increase in the depth that they've shown and the caliber of the players on the bench is a lot better than it has been in the past. And I think that what we've seen when she's absent from the lineup is a lot of other players stepping up and being willing to take on some leadership roles. I think players like Sophie Schmidt, who is a very quality player, can pass the ball very well, works very hard, and is also has a great physical presence without having to rely on that. She has the technical aspect to back it up, and players like that will step up in Christine Sinclair's absence. Same with players like Diana Matheson, who actually isn't in the roster right now due to injury, but a similar situation there. So it's great to see other players step in and take on a leadership role and take on the role of being that voice on the field and being that role model to perhaps some of the younger teammates who are coming in. I mean, it's great to see a lot of the youth getting some playing time in this tournament. Alicia Mollerstedt, who I've actually played with the Toronto Lynx, is a great young player who just needs to get some games under her belt and get some experience, because she's technically fantastic, can pass the ball very well, very aggressive player. And it's great for her to play with players like Sophie Schmidt in the midfield and play with players like Candace Chapman behind her to direct her a little bit and give her a sense of what it's like to play at this level.
You mentioned that the competition Canada has faced thus far, obviously not of the highest caliber, and Mexico in the semifinal on Friday is going to represent the toughest test that the Canadian team has faced so far. What are your thoughts on that game and Canada's chances going into it with the Olympic berth on the line?
Right. I mean, they're at the point right now where you really cannot afford to take Mexico lightly, and I think they're aware of that. I think they've been aware of that for a number of years. You just have to look as far back as last year when Mexico stunned the U.S. in the World Cup qualification tournament. And really not taking them lightly is going to be the key to this game. The Mexican team is a lot faster, a lot fitter, and a lot more well-organized than they have been in the past. I mean, they've always been a good technical team, but now they also have the fitness and the physical ability to back it up. And it's going to be interesting, because I think they actually play a similar style of play now, and knocking the ball around, attacking quickly, players who are more technically adept and willing to go forward and take shots. And the Canadians are going to have to be aware of players like Veronica Perez and Maribel Dominguez, with their ability to take shots from distance and to capitalize on opportunities, even just small opportunities. The back line is going to have to be very aware of players like that.
So, Claire, I believe you went through kind of a similar experience yourself, but in the tournament in 2008, you had beat a bunch of teams, and then you played a semifinal against Mexico. Psychologically, having sort of beat all these teams by so much, does that make the team overconfident? How does that affect them?
I think that generally the feeling coming into tournaments like this is to take it one game at a time, but to be aware that what you play in the games that you play in the early rounds of preliminary games are not necessarily going to be representative of what you face in the semifinals or the finals, and to not necessarily make too much out of the preliminary games. And I think the team has coped well in the past with beating some of the newer teams of the tournament in the preliminary games quite handily, and then being prepared to play the likes of Mexico or the U.S. in the semifinals. And in 2008, that was the approach we had. It was take it one game at a time, and then when we came up against Mexico, it was just another game that we had to show up for work for. We were prepared for the competition, and I have no doubt that John Herdman will prepare the team adequately and really make sure that they're psychologically where they need to be in order to stay organized and to attack the Mexican team.
And focusing on the psychology of the team is something that has quickly become one of John Herdman's hallmarks ever since he was given the job at the head of the Canadian national team. What are your thoughts on his performance as national team coach thus far, both from that element of preparing the team psychologically and what he's brought on the tactical side on the field?
I think one of the best parts about John Herdman is his enthusiasm and his clear passion for the game, and that you can't help but have that rub off on the players. And he's very determined to make sure that this team doesn't repeat what happened in the World Cup. He's made sure that within the initial camps that he's had with the team, that he's dealt with that, laid it to bed, put it to rest, and moved on. So this team is ready to play another big tournament, and they're ready to step away from what happened in the World Cup and no longer let that kind of be the definition of the team. But I mean, what I'm really excited to see is even just when you see clips on TV of practices with them, is that he's so passionate about the game, and you can see that in the way he directs players on the field. You can see that in the way that I don't even think I've seen him sit down in this tournament. He's standing the whole time because he's so excited to see his team play, and he really is eager to have them do well. And I think that the tactical side that he's brought to the team as well has been great. I really like to see them using the width of the park and playing through the midfield. I think that the central midfielders have been quite involved. Yes, they haven't really been tested with any pace in the midfield, and they've had a lot of time, but in terms of easing themselves into this tournament, it's been great to see them getting some time on the ball in the midfield, getting some touches on the ball, and really using the width and switching the ball back and forth. I think that's one of the tactical things that he's been focusing on.
Claire, what have your thoughts been on the crowds in Vancouver so far?
Well, I was there for the Canada-Cuba game, and I believe there were about 12,000 there. It's really hard. It's really hard to know what's going to happen. I mean, I was also part of the 2002 World Cup team or Under-19 World Cup team in Edmonton, where 50,000 people showed up for the final game. So it really is very difficult to know what's going to happen. And women's soccer is, yes, it's been around for a long time in North America, but in terms of its popularity in the public, it's still in its infancy. And you can't necessarily force people or guilt them into showing up to games. That's just not the way it works. And also, it's hard to get people interested in preliminary games when teams are winning 14-0, and the quality of play, not necessarily on the part of the American team or the Canadian team or the Mexican team, but on the part of some of the newer teams, is not what even people who are used to watching soccer are used to. So it's a process, and the culture for soccer in Canada is very different from other countries in Europe, such as in England. There are grown men that'll cry if their team loses, and that culture doesn't exist yet in North America. So it's a process, and we're just going to have to wait to see what happens in the future.
As someone who is in a room currently comprised of three grown men that have cried when their team is lost, I'd say the culture has made a little bit of inroads here, but you're of course right in that we're not quite there yet. But you mentioned the 2002 U19 tournament and the big final in Edmonton with 50,000 people in the stands. The showdown was Canada and the U.S., and it looks as though, I mean, of course, not to overlook Mexico in the semifinal, but it looks as though we're being funneled towards a similar final again this year. Looking ahead to, again, not to jinx anything or to put the cart before the horse and knock on wood there, but if we're looking ahead to a final between Canada and the U.S. and where both of these teams are sitting right now, what would you expect from that game, both in terms of the on-field result and the atmosphere around it?
It is really hard to say, and it's really hard to predict. In terms of the on-field atmosphere, whenever you have the Canadians playing the Americans, it's a physical battle, and it's not that they hate each other or anything like that, but it's definitely a neighborly rivalry. And I mean, I've played in several games against the United States, and we both really, really want to beat each other. So a lot of the games now, especially since Canada's made some great strides in the women's game in the last decade or so, that a lot of the games are a lot closer. I do think that this American team looks very quick and very fit and very strong, and I think the Canadians, if they do get to that point, will have their work cut out for them. The Americans have a very excellent technical and tactical awareness, and a very deep bench. and that might be difficult for them in terms of the crowd atmosphere. I mean, it's been growing so far, and it's I was there on a weekend game, so obviously the crowd turnout was a little bit better than it has been during midweek. But I would expect that, especially given its proximity to the States, BC Place should be able to occupy some more fans. I think Peter Montopoli recently said that they've opened up the rest of the lower bowl due to demand. So it'd be great to see if we can get that lower bowl full.
And one of the big things about this Canadian team is that it's kind of the new Canadian team. It's a break with what we had with the World Cup and before that. And I spoke with Karina LeBlanc before the World Cup, and she said that she was kind of the leader of Canada's victory celebrations, and that Celine Dion figured very heavily in these victory celebrations. Now, with a new, kind of a new Canadian team, say they win this big final, hypothetical final match against the United States, does the new Canadian team, in your insider's kind of knowledge, have a new embarrassingly Canadian celebration?
Wow, I have not been with the team since 2008. So, and at the time, Celine Dion did play heavily into a lot of mm-hmm. A lot of the celebrations. I really wouldn't think that that would have changed.
Justin Bieber hasn't taken over.
Ooh.
No. They really go for the classics. So. So I think that probably hasn't changed much since I've been there.
Some traditions. Maybe Bryan Adams, you know, his hometown in Vancouver.
No. Well,
not that
like,
classic.
Sounds like some traditions do.
Man, you don't mess with superstitions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never thought that I'd see Celine Dion as kind of amp up music at a pro sporting event, but hey, what do I know?
Yeah. Actually, I can't remember, but I don't even remember if she came on in the locker room before games. It was typically more kind of on the bus or afterwards. So
it's something to look forward to.
Which Celine Dion song? Was it a particular song or just
whatever? Oh, man, I don't even remember. I usually had my headphones in.
I don't blame you.
Celine Dion fan, but I can't remember, to be honest.
It's funny. I mean, we've spoken to a few players on this show, and it seems that, I don't know, the players we speak to always seem to be the ones that are, you know, are wearing their own headphones in the locker room, and they seem to be very, very self-sustaining when it comes to their musical interludes. So, I don't know. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Claire, one last question for you. It's a question I asked you before we started recording. I'm going to ask you again. Is there any chance we'll be seeing you on Twitter anytime soon?
That depends. I mean, if you think there's any chance I'm going to start prostituting my literacy on Twitter. Oh, snap. No, it's doubtful. I'm not necessarily concise enough to be on Twitter. And
I'm not sure you need to be concise. I mean, there's some of the people on Twitter are really it's a wild west out there.
All you need to do is, you know, take out a letter here, substitute a number there, and you can get a very complex thought into 140 mm-hmm. characters. Doesn't that sound appealing?
Yeah, I don't write in text speak, but I'm sure Kim Kardashian does. So you can look her up.
I'm fairly confident that Tennyson and Byron and Shelley would have used smiley face emoticons if they were around at the time.
Oh, really? Wow.
I've just made that up, really.
That's
but
upsetting.
Continuing in a proud literary...
12?
Continuing in a proud literary tradition here. We tried. I'm going to keep trying to get Claire Rustad on Twitter. I will probably be unsuccessful, but we did get her to come on this show and share some of her thoughts on the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament. We appreciate it very much, Claire. Thanks for taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks once again to Claire for putting up with our bull crap. I feel like I should probably throw that bit of thanks out there after every interview we do. But there's a lot to be said about the Women's Olympic Tournament. We've said a lot of it, and we're going to be talking about it next week once it's wrapped up as well. But for the time being, we're going to get into a familiar feature here on the Some Canadian Guys show, promotion relegation. Every week, we each pick a story we like to promote and a story we don't like to relegate. So, Grant?
Yep.
As is customary, I will turn to you first and ask, who or what would you like to promote?
I am going to promote... Don't look at me like that.
Well, like what?
This moment of anticipation.
All right, I'll look away.
A former player, he played for the Toronto Metros Croatia in the mid-1970s, Eusebio.
Holy smokes!
There it is. He recently turned 70, and he's gone through some health problems lately, but the doctors have recently told him He is now healthy enough to celebrate his 70th birthday with a glass of wine.
Can I interject briefly, Grant?
Sure, yeah, as always.
You identified Eusebio by referring to the fact that he played for Toronto Metro's Croatia. Yeah,
that's how everybody knows him.
He's one of the
greatest players
of all time.
That's how everybody knows him.
He just, you know, was a fringe competitor at the 1966 World Cup. I don't even know if he saw the pitch.
He played for some small team called Benfica. I don't know if you've ever heard of it before.
Yeah, they're like some sort of semi-pro team somewhere.
Anyway, Grant.
I'm promoting the fact that I just came across this news story today, and being Portuguese, I sort of thought he sort of woke up every day and just had a glass of wine. I mean, I thought that's what happened. That's what happened.
No.
No.
Okay. No.
All right.
Also, that sentence was framed in such a way that made it sound like you were Portuguese.
Right. Well, I'm not, but.
Okay. Yeah, no. So then that's just a bit of stereotyping, Grant.
Oh, yeah. Cute stereotyping.
Okay. Jamie?
Yeah.
Do you have something to add about Eusebio?
No, I was just scratching my head. I didn't raise my hand.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll turn to you and rather awkwardly ask, who or what would you like to promote?
Well, I'm glad you asked. I would like to promote from our CONCACAF Olympic qualifying women's tournament, if I've got those words in the wrong order, you get what I mean.
You're fired from Sportsnet.
Yeah, exactly. Sportsnet. We can watch it on Sportsnet.
Watch it on Sportsnet. Known. Also on Sportsnet.ca. Ba-ba-da-ba-da.
My promotion is Costa Rican defender Fabiola Sanchez. I'm promoting her. She just did the cutest thing. She thought that she could leave Christine Sinclair unmarked in the box.
Silly.
Yeah. And not only that, when Sinclair inevitably burned her horribly for this by scoring quite a lovely goal, Sanchez thought that she would just go ahead and whack her hand at the ball as it went in the net.
Well, that's ill-advised.
It's ill-advised. It's illegal, as per the rules of the game, if not the law of the country. And the best
no,
part
the
of...
the law of the country.
The anyway. Best part being that this happened in the sixth minute. I mean, everybody got all up in arms about Luis Suarez doing that in the World Cup. But, I mean, that was, you know, at the death, and it saved the game.
Extra
for
time, dying minutes, World
exactly.
Cup quarterfinal.
This is a round robin game, 6 minutes in. That I think, it's just a hilariously misguided young lady, and also that's CONCACAF level cheating, and that's what we look for.
That seems a bit early for the hand of God. 6 minutes into the game,
it's also the complete wrong end of the pitch.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Well,
and also it didn't work. The ball still went in.
Just bad all around.
Yeah. See,
wait a minute. So hold on a second. Why are you promoting this?
Because Canada was the beneficiary of all this nonsense.
All right. Fair enough.
Jamie, mentioning that Canada-Costa Rica game, when you said you were going to have something out of that game, I thought it might be the hilariously terrible back pass turning into an own goal that the Costa Rican team inflicted upon itself there. No love for that play?
I just feel bad for the goalie.
Oh, yeah, that is unfortunate.
I don't feel bad for this young lady, Fabiola Sanchez.
That's why you're promoting her.
Exactly.
And that smile means you're done. So, I'll move on to my promotion for this week, which is a fellow that that some of you may have heard of, and if you haven't, then you haven't heard his name. Kevin Prince-Boateng, defender, AC Milan. He is injured, unfortunately, and there are a lot of different ways that that players can become injured in the game of soccer, you know, on the field with terrible tackles, off the field with, you know, home renovation injuries. He got injured in a bit of a different way from what we've heard. I'm just going to read from this story here. Bedroom gymnastics are being blamed for the injury that will sideline AC Milan midfielder Kevin Prince-Boateng for a month. Apparently, his supermodel actress girlfriend Melissa Satta told Vanity Fair that, quote, "The reason why he is always injured is because we have sex 7 to 10 times a week. His latest injury is to his left thigh, so that seems somewhat plausible. Whether or not it's accurate, though, I think that it really elevates Kevin Prince-Boateng to a level that other players could only hope to match. I mean, you see a lot of players carry themselves in such a way that is trying to express that they're men, they're full of testosterone, they're real tough dudes. Kevin Prince-Boateng not only goes out and cripples Michael Ballack for fun, he also can be injured in such a way that his girlfriend, he doesn't even come out and say it himself. He doesn't need to. He doesn't need to brag.
You don't really need to strut around when your supermodel girlfriend,
that's what I mean,
is saying that, you know, you have sex too much.
Yes. Mm. And that's when you know that you have truly made it. He can't strut with the injured thigh, after all.
I'd suggest
puff his chest out.
I'd suggest that this is worth promoting because he's just perpetrated the biggest and most glamorous con on the world of football in the last week, because he's probably just got the injury playing Xbox or something, or he just kind of fell down in the shower, and he somehow convinced his really hot girlfriend to, hey, if you can you just do me a favor, and A, this is embarrassing, but if you just go out there and say that we have sex so much that I hurt myself, that'll really help things out.
Maybe he was playing Xbox in the shower
while having sex with his girlfriend.
There you go.
Wow, that's what we call the trifecta.
Yeah.
I don't even care how he injured himself. If, like you say, Jamie, he's able to convince his supermodel actress girlfriend to go out and perpetrate that lie on his behalf, that's still worthy of a promotion.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, Grant.
Yes.
Who or what would you like to relegate this week?
Mario Balotelli. I'm not actually relegating him. I'm relegating what his agent said recently.
Okay.
Was that poor Mario feels persecuted in England.
Why always him?
He feels persecuted in England, and his agent is now sort of threatening that he's going to leave England because he's being persecuted.
Oh.
Well, I just feel this is kind of a tack that, like, a lot of non-English players, especially the really good ones, tend to sort of use whenever things aren't going well for them, that they are being persecuted.
And they also go after the weather in Manchester. We'll keep an eye out for that.
Yeah, that's true. That is another one, yeah. The rain. As soon as you start saying it's too rainy and cold in Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
Who said that?
Ronaldo's always going on. Tevez.
Oh, whatever. Tevez blames, you know, Mancini for a hangnail he has or some such thing.
Apparently, actually, there's more annual rainfall in Milan than Manchester.
Don't complicate things.
Yeah, but Grant, you've shown you're a fan of stereotypes. England is rainy.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And also, that doesn't appear in your talking notes. You looked right at me when you said that, so I
don't think
you
just
made that up.
No, I read that somewhere. I read a lot of things.
Okay.
When you're not Googling hip thrusting.
Exactly. In between those searches.
I think it's worth noting that
I just read about annual rainfall in different cities in Europe.
You do check that on your BlackBerry quite a bit.
That's true.
A product of research in motion, of which Jamie is not CEO.
No, not at all.
Grant, you successfully pronounced Eusebio and Balotelli here in the course of 4 minutes.
I know, I'm on a streak.
Yeah, I think that our shtick of you not pronouncing names very well is kind of coming to an end.
Well, we still got some time left.
I suppose if you're traveling to India shortly, it's probably in your best interest to work on pronouncing unfamiliar names.
Yeah, I suppose. I can't keep this lie going for too long. We had Grant has written Eusebio out phonetically on a piece of paper to make sure that he got it right. So that is definitely cheating.
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, it's you. it's the word you, like, you know, spelled out finet. Not you as in Y-O-U the person, but
Duos.
You as in Yoo-hoo, the chocolate milk. You hyphen say hyphen B hyphen O.
You're breaking the fourth wall. Kind of wall is being broken here.
Well, then I'll keep the walls intact and turn to Jamie for his relegation of the week.
Jamie, don't bring the house down.
I'm gonna attempt to bring down the Rwandan government right here. I'm relegating Rwandan President Paul Kagame, and I'm only assuming that I'm pronouncing this correctly.
By mentioning his name, his government has now fallen apart.
A mention from me certainly isn't helping him. And he has taken it upon himself, the cheeky devil, to take on Arsene Wenger on Twitter. Apparently, President Paul Kagame is an Arsenal fan, which would suggest that I might promote him, but he's decided to take to Twitter in his official capacity as president of a country and say that Arsene Wenger, it's time that he goes. He said, I very much support Arsenal, but to be honest, Wenger needs to coach another team now, and Arsenal needs another coach.
That is hilarious.
Wait,
it's ridiculous.
But,
I know it's ridiculous. That's why it's hilarious.
You say that that's in his official role. Like, was that an act taken to, like, the Rwandan parliament? Like,
yeah.
You know, let it be known
that's
Arsene
motion.
Wenger...
Bill 331B,
introduce this piece of legislation,
the Anti-Wenger Act, and he goes on from there. Like, what else does he tweet here? Yeah, when a good team, in brackets players, and a good coach fail for long to deliver, one of them has to change, or even both. !!
Wow.
He goes on even to say from there, the real slash main danger is for anyone to get used to mediocre slash lackluster results and or results. A performance and get away with it and accept it or keeps finding excuses for it. !! I mean,
wow.
He's just firing out the exclamations.
Think about prostituting his literacy.
Exactly.
I was going to say, things like this are not going to convince Claire to join Twitter.
No, I did a poor job of reading that, but he certainly did a poor job of writing it. And now I suggest that he is unfit to lead a country, based purely on his position on Arsene Wenger.
I kind of hope Wenger now takes to Twitter and starts, like, criticizing sort of the economic performance of Rwanda.
Wow.
Well, that's the worst part. When it came out that he was a fan of Arsenal, Wenger and the whole Arsenal team signed, I think it was a banner, and they sent it to him.
I thought you were going
to
say signed a bunch of players.
Yeah, they signed a bunch of Rwandan players.
No, no, kind
he,
of like,
yeah, he came out as a celebrity gooner, and then they sent him on his 50th birthday thing an Arsenal banner signed by the team and a letter in which Arsenal told, or which Arsene Wenger told him of his pride of learning that the Rwandan head of state is a keen supporter.
Wow. Can he take the banner back?
I don't know. He's taking a lot of things back these days. He's done Sol Campbell, Thierry Henry. Maybe he can sign the banner on a loan for 2 months.
You know who's next? Nicholas Bentner.
Actually, you know who is next. It says at the end of this piece, Arsenal's worldwide fan base is also believed to include Cuba's Fidel Castro.
There we go.
You keep off Twitter, Castro.
I wonder what team Robert Mugabe supports.
Oh, yikes. Apparently, Osama bin Laden was also an Arsenal supporter.
Really?
He lived in London for a while and was... Yeah, known to attend matches at Highbury.
Wow.
Yeah.
How does that make you feel, Jamie?
Not great. But, I mean, in more recent terms, Gaddafi was known to be a Liverpool supporter. Or, no, an Everton supporter. But then they found a Liverpool mug in his hideout after he died.
He was just full of lies, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's betrayed all of Merseyside.
Plastic fan.
In addition to his plastic face, plastic hair, plastic medals.
I'm going to move this right on to Squiz and ask who, because nobody asks you anything. I'm going to ask you, who are you relegating this week?
It's because I don't have any answers, but I will provide a relegation nonetheless. I am relegating the co-owner of the Wellington Phoenix in the Australian A-League, where Issy Nakajima Ferran is currently plying his trade for the Brisbane Roar. This has nothing to do with the Brisbane Roar. It is Wellington Phoenix co-owner Gareth Morgan has challenged football fans to start turning up to A-League games or risk losing more home matches to other parts of the country. Now, you know, of course, this is a Kiwi team taking part in the Australian League, so you would figure that they would have a lot of support for the squad. Not so. They are averaging crowds of about 6,500 people at Westpac Stadium this year, and the owner has taken the measure of threatening to have more games played outside of Wellington. Just, yeah, it might be the name on the jersey and on the crest, but meh, we can play games elsewhere. I can kind of see it as a bit of a motivating factor, trying to light a fire under fans' asses. But I think when a co-owner of the team essentially comes out and says in not so many words that, you know, the location of the team is just a mere trifling matter. I mean, yeah, we've seen teams relocate. We, you know, in North American sports, especially. Grant, you're familiar with this.
Yes,
we have. How are the Phoenix Coyotes doing these days?
Yes, we have.
Well, okay, Grant, if it was 1995 and, an owner of the Winnipeg Jets came out and said...
I believe they did threaten that several times.
Yeah, I've never heard of it.
So, yeah, well, a lot.
Well, so how did that make you feel?
Not good. Sad. Bad. It made me feel bad.
Well, then I am especially relegating...
Destroyed my childhood.
I'm relegating Wellington Phoenix co-owner Gareth Morgan for destroying Grant's childhood.
Well, as we heard in our interview today, you can't... you can't guilt people into coming to soccer games.
Yeah, this whole...
That's
if you don't,
bull. I do that all the time.
The whole...
Yeah, if you live in Vancouver, go to the game on Friday.
You literally
you're a bad
can
person.
Do it, but that doesn't mean they're going to go.
It doesn't engender...
I mean, you can do all sorts of things, but it doesn't work.
And we'll have to wait and see. We'll have to wait and see how this "if you don't use it, you lose it" school of motivation works for soccer teams.
Quote: "You can do all sorts of things, but it doesn't work." Yeah. End quote.
Just ask Kevin Prince Boateng.
It was him that hurt Balak a few years ago.
It took him right out, and then he played for Ghana, and his cousin plays for Germany. It was a whole sordid affair.
Yeah, well, that's why I got confused. I thought maybe it was Jerome, but that would make even less sense. So I think that brings us to the end of promotion relegation, but not the end of the show, because we still have Taste the Trivia to attend to, which is our weekly trivia challenge, where you, the listeners...
And this is the last one, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we can keep the questions going. I say let's keep this going. Anyway, yeah, to throw this out there, we had a bit of we had some prizes to give out for a while, and we're currently sorting out our prizing situation. But I don't think
maybe we can give away an I-League soccer team.
That's true.
I'll look into it.
Okay, Grant, you can investigate whether or not
A project for
Hindustan
me.
Aeronautics Limited is accepting buy-in partners in the team.
Yeah, you go down there, you lift the tail, you look at the chops, you see how this thing's going. Right after they're done doing that to you.
For the time being, we will say that the prize for this week is the joy of just answering a question correctly and providing a question for next week and have your name thrown out on next week's show.
joy of answering a question correctly. Ugh. That sounds so nerdy.
Jamie, we're
Canadian soccer fans.
Jamie, we're in a studio talking about Canadian soccer. I don't think accusations of nerdiness are.
I think this is about the coolest.
We have
thing
a lot
going.
Of showgirls dancing around us.
Yeah.
What is that hand motion?
Nobody
you're doing?
Can see them.
What is that hand motion?
That's showgirls
doing,
dancing.
Man? Is that what you learned from your hip thrusting Google session? Exactly.
I think we should get this like Bob McCowan. We should be taped live and on the air as we sit in the studio with all the...
Yeah, then I wouldn't have to do
if
that.
Not the showgirls, at least Grant's horrible gesture of what showgirls
I think that Grant should be like the Baba Booey of primetime sports. You know, like Bob McCowan's arguing with Stephen Brunt about something and Grant's just off in the corner with maracas and just making a bunch of noise. He just shows up at random places, Bob McCowan. No?
Yeah, I can
we'll see.
Women's Olympic qualifying on Sportsnet. What the hell was I talking about? Oh, yeah, taste of trivia. Well, we have an answer from last week to the question, and we're going to throw out another question provided to us by the person who provided the correct answer last week. And if you have the answer for this question, give it to us, or don't.
Yeah, there might be a prize, there might not be. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, why not? It's just the joy of interacting with us. Last week we asked, or the question was posed, in the year that Canada had its best showing at the Women's World Cup, who scored the most goals for Canada? Bit of a, not really a trick question, but there were two co-top goal scorers in that tournament, Christine Sinclair and Christine Latham, with three goals apiece at the 2003 Women's World Cup. The winner with the correct answer there was Mitch Tierney, who has given us our question for this week, which again is very thematic, just kind of coincidental, I suppose. The question on this week's Taste of the Trivia is... Which three teams has the Canadian women's national team played against but never beaten? Which three teams has the Canadian women's national team played against but never beaten? If you have the answer to that, head over to our Facebook page at facebook.com/somecanadianguys. If you're the first person to provide the correct answer, you will be the winner of this week's Taste of the Trivia, and you can give us a question for next week's Taste of the Trivia.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can not. It's really up to you. It's a free country. You can do what you like.
We'll guilt you into it, though.
Yeah, it just doesn't work.
Yeah, you can do all kinds of things. It doesn't mean it's going to work.
And remember, kids, that's the lesson to take away from this episode.
Nuggets of wisdom.
Of the Some Canadian Guys podcast.
Nuggets of wisdom.
While you're on the internet, perhaps on our Facebook page or Googling hip thrusting or any other such things.
I was Googling hip thrusting U.S. coach.
Yeah, that makes it a lot better. End up with Bob Bradley animated GIFs. Now you're going to go to bed with that in your head. While
I was
you're
hoping
on the...
for Bruce Arena.
While you are on the internet, and if you're a fan of Twitter... You can follow the three of us. I am at a new Twitter handle, no longer at CDN Soccer Blog. You can now find me at Daniel Squizzato, DanielSquizzato. Grant?
I've actually switched myself to CDN Soccer Blog in a cynical attempt to grab all your followers.
How's that working for you so far?
Yeah, you can try anything. So my handle is SCG Grant.
Jamie, where are you?
At Doyle_Jamie.
And if you're not on Twitter, you can still find us, Grant and I, at CanadianSoccerNews.com. And Jamie, what have you got on the go at Sportsnet.ca?
This and that.
Did you speak to a member of the Canadian men's national team
recently?
Yeah,
I spoke with David Edgar.
Yeah, he's from Kitchener-Waterloo, also not the new CEO of RIM.
No. He's a good hometown boy, though. Had some things to say about his situation at Burnley and his newly cemented, seemingly, role with the Canadian men's national team. You should probably read it.
Yeah, whether or not you have a BlackBerry, you should head over and read it. We will be yammering at you again next week, but until then, we are, as always, Some Canadian Guys talking about soccer.